Greetings, listener. Welcome to Committee Quest.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of Zone of Truth, second in our series of interviews. For those of you that just want us to start rolling dice already, we are working on it. We start recording next week, and within a month or so after that, we will start releasing our episodes again. But until then, I wanted to speak with creators of D&D content, and today I am joined by Anthony Joyce. Hello, Anthony.
Hi, hey, thanks for having me on. Looking forward to the interview.
No worries. So you might recognize Anthony Joyce's name if you're a listener to our podcast. We ran one of his adventures, The Heir of Orcus Verse 1. That is the one that had the twin tieflings and the chess game, where we modified that slightly to add a vampire for our adventurers to kidnap. Anthony, could you please introduce yourself to our listeners and who you are and what you do?
Yeah, sure. So my name's Anthony Joyce. I am a D&D 5th edition designer on DM's Guild, mainly with adventures that I write, and I'm most known for The Heir of Orcus Verses 1 and 2 for Adventurers League. I've done a few other small adventures, and I'm really enjoying it. And what I do in my real job is I'm active duty army, and I'm a strategist, so it's kind of fun to do that during the day, and at night, when I'm not wrangling my three boys and hanging out with my wife, I try to design stuff on the side for DM's Guild.
Okay, awesome, man. And it is quite a lot of designing that you do. I mean, the work you've been putting out is large and really engaging. So today's interview, we've got a bit of a theme around writing, inspiration, and adventure design. But I wanted to start off with how you got into playing tabletop RPGs.
Yeah, so it's funny because growing up, I've always been into like RPGs, and mainly on video game consoles or PC, I would play like Skyrim, Warcraft, EverQuest was really like the first MMO I played. And I always saw like the books when I went to Barnes & Nobles or to bookstores, Dungeons & Dragons, and I heard about it. And I always was fascinated with the idea of, wow, I can play this RPG and not need like a video game console to do it. But I never had any friends to do it with. Simply the rules as a young kid were kind of over my head, so I couldn't just pick it up and run it. But it was always fascinating to me. So fast forward to about 2015, I was getting ready to go on a deployment. This is when President Obama came on TV and he said, hey, there's ISIS stuff going on in the Middle East. We're going to send some troops. And I got a call the day later, the next day, hey, that's you. You're going to take your company, because I was a company commander at the time. So I had about 100 soldiers under me. And you're going to go deploy back to Iraq. So it was my second time there. But I said, you know what? I'm going to have probably no internet connectivity. I'm going to buy the 5th edition core set that had just recently come out. I'm going to take it with. So I had a soldier who had played mainly 3.5 edition and 4th edition. And he said, hey, I'll dungeon master for you guys. And I took him up on the offer. I bought the books, provided them. And when we were overseas on deployment, we ran a weekly session every Sunday. And I played with my soldiers and we had a great time. It was a great bonding experience. It was fun. It took our mind off of where we were at. And it was really invigorating. And so ever since then, I fell in love with 5th edition and I've continued to play online mainly because I move around so much in the military, but it's great with the technology. I can keep in contact with friends and other soldiers that I know. And then I do run now a bi-weekly in-person group in my house, but I love it.
Yeah, for sure, man. That's great. So our group is the same. We play online because I've moved away to the country. Are tabletop role-playing games kind of big in the military in the US? Like, is it a common thing or was that sort of a bit niche for you guys?
You know, I think with the advent of 5th edition, and as we're seeing it kind of just take off and explode everywhere across all spectrums of types of players and demographics, we're seeing that, I think, with the military. I know when you go online, there's lots of military members who play it. And there's a lot of people overseas who request adventures or hardback books. So I think it's kind of like a mirror image of what's going on in bigger society, where tabletop is just exploding right now.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I'm in a very small country town in Australia, and we have like a very large Adventurers League and a ton of like small home games going on everywhere. It really is just blowing up everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm surprised Australia with it's like you have this like hub of tabletop going on over there, because I look online and I can see where games are being played, and you all have a very robust tabletop community. So kudos to Australia.
Yeah, it's cool, man. Like we the game stores are really kicking off, and there's a game store in the capital city near me, Adelaide, that's got like this they've got this basement that has five rooms you can hire out just to play role-playing games. You know, it's really, really cool. Something that we haven't had ever or for a long time. What made you move from playing and running games to start making adventures, creating your own adventures?
So, yeah, I had, after I started playing fifth edition, I became a dungeon master. I mainly started running games, but I was fascinated with the idea of writing an adventure. It was really with Adventures League, because they started up a community content program where you can make modules and people can play in organized play. And so that really fascinated me, because I said, you know, hey, this would be neat to make an adventure. People around the world could play it. That'd be cool. And I could try that. But what I really wanted to do was take advantage of the licensing through DM's Guild and kind of try to see if I could make a character in an adventure that might become part of like canon down the road if it was ever successful. And so that was kind of like my little pet project. And that's where the Heir of Orcus was the first thing I ever worked on, came out through that kind of thinking. And I found out that I love it. Like, and it was really also part of it was like, hey, I want to buy some Dwarven Forge terrain for like my tabletop. And so I convinced my wife, I'm like, I have this crazy idea. Hear me out. I'll make an adventure and I'll sell it. And then I'll use that money to like buy, you know, stuff for my hobby. But it kind of spiraled out of control in a good way, where I actually fell in love with it. So now I'm just like producing content.
Yeah.
I haven't bought any Dwarven Forge yet. I find myself commissioning a lot more art for the next project instead.
Yeah.
But that's good, you know.
And that's the thing. To be honest, that's what the artwork you have got in your adventures is what sold me on using it in the podcast, because I put a post onto the DM's Guild Facebook page. And I was like, hey, content creator Facebook page. I'm like, hey, I'm doing a podcast and we're running things. And you were one of the people that responded. And I opened up the adventure and I just saw all this awesome, pixel art and comic style art. And I was like, oh, man, this is going to fit exactly with what my guys like. So that's kudos for putting the extra effort into that artwork, man.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, artwork to me is a huge piece of, I think, the adventure, because I'm also the Army sent me to get educated in how to teach adults. And through that process, I was an instructor at a university for cadets, and I learned the different styles of learning, right? Some people can read and they learn and they can retain information, but some people, they have to visualize it, see it.
That's right.
So I think with my products that I make, I'm very much tune with the idea that some people need to visualize what it is that you're trying to convey to really grasp it, versus just reading it in text, which might be hard for them.
Exactly.
I'm more of a visual guy. Yeah.
And like a lot of, because I read a lot of adventures and quite often they can be difficult to follow. Like I do a lot of Adventures League up here, and you can get lost, you know, reading some adventures. So it's cool that you've got that. And that kind of leads into our next question about the inspiration for some of your adventures, because the artwork is definitely reminiscent of some of my favorite Super Nintendo and Sega video games that I used to play. So what are some of the influences for you when you're creating your adventures?
Yeah, I think for the first batch I made where I went with Asurion as the artist, he does pixel art. Great. He's a great artist, by the way, if anybody out there is looking for a pixel artist. And he also does kind of comic-y art as well.
We got a map of Amma in our world done by him as well.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I remember your world map was done by him. So I saw that and I said, you know, I'm surprised that no one has done pixelated art with an RPG, like a tabletop, because the two, I think, are inspired by each other, right? Because you have like Legend of Zelda and Link from back in the day that you can see their roots are probably in Dungeons and Dragons, if you ask the creators themselves. I mean, it's the fantasy tropes are there. Yeah. And so it's kind of like a feedback loop, right? So these games were made and they were inspired by high fantasy and Dungeons and Dragons. And now I'm using it. I'm using that art style to replicate an adventure in it. And I had a lot of fun. And I think for the virtual tabletop player, I think it really added a different aspect of immersion to the game.
Yeah, we had a go on Roll20 with it, and it was awesome. It didn't really. I was sort of trialing it out to use it for the podcast, but using visuals when you're making a podcast doesn't make for very entertaining podcast listening. But yeah, it's really good. I thoroughly suggest it. Checking it out if you are playing on Roll20, or are you on Fantasy Grounds as well?
It comes with the Fantasy Grounds module when you buy it.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Now, what other is there? Are there any films or any other stuff that you get your inspiration from?
Yes. So, Verse 3, which is coming out in October, that one's very much influenced by film. What I wanted to do with the storyline of the Heir of Orcus is I'm having a lot of fun with each of the first two verses are very much connected to one another, and that's your typical, I think, fantasy vibe. But verse 3 and verse 4, which are coming out in October and November respectively, they're different vibes each in and of themselves. And verse 3 I'll talk about because that one is very much influenced by like Blade Runner.
Oh yeah.
And the different cyberpunk type vibes you get out there. Even the movie Alien, it's a little bit inspired by some of the scenes in there. So I kind of wanted to look at the lore that exists in Forgotten Realms and see how far I could push the envelope to tie in the themes that are present in those movies. But kind of like inspired by, I have the Sims that in the game in verse 3 that are kind of like the replicants, if you will. And you have the Nautiloid ship. I won't spoil too much, but there's like a futuristic alien type vibe going on there. So it's really exciting. I think there's a lot to be drawn from those genres and implanted into fantasy. And I think it works the way it was integrated.
Yeah. I mean, visually it's spot on. You know, there's some really awesome artwork of like what that city looks like, and I don't know the name of it.
So the city is Durradin.
Is it the Black Pyramid that has?
Yeah, the Black Pyramid.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so that's like a tavern, eatery, nightclub, all those sorts of things, all in one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's cool, man. I like it. So when it comes to your design process, how do you go from the ideas in your head to the finished product?
So I think my design process is unstructured. What I mean by that is I sit there for, months or at least weeks, if not months, and I think about what I want to do with a project. If that's an adventure, like I have the Session Zero adventure I made, which is the Curse of Skull Island, I sit there and I think about, you know, how do I make this adventure? What do I do? What do I want to see? And I just sit there and I ruminate on it. Mm-hmm. This may sound bad, but I don't take notes and I don't do outlines really. And I just sit down and start writing. And when I start writing, I write what comes to me. I'll take breaks and then I'll look back at what I wrote and I'll kind of think about it in my head. The biggest piece where changes occur is after I've written a draft script of the adventure or product is when I play test it. And I notice that there's usually a little chunk that I'll modify based off playtesting. But overall, I would say 70% of the structure will remain intact. But that other 30% is very important for playtesting to get it right.
And do you think that is mechanical stuff and encounter design that changes as opposed to storyline?
The times I've playtested and the changes I've had to make from all of my products, they've really been the way in which I'm conveying a scene. Yeah. So in my mind, I know what I want to convey.
Yeah.
When I write it, it makes sense to me. But to others, it just may fall flat or it's not received or it's overly complicated when it doesn't need to be. So for example, verse 3, that entire first episode from the beginning to when you get to the city. So up until you get to the city, that whole first episode was rewritten after playtesting. So I think it came out much smoother. At first, it was very convoluted and kind of clunky, but I think it's a better start now because of the playtesting. So I would tell any designer out there, like, if there's one thing, you could write a good product without taking notes and an outline. I think the important piece is at least playtesting it, even if it's just one time, to see how the story flows.
So how do you go about with your playtesting? Do you have a set group of people that you work with regularly, or do you open it up to the public? How do you work your playtesting?
I started opening up playtesting to the public with verse 1 and 2, the first major ones I did, I playtested amongst close friends. And that was it. Verse 3, though, in verse 4, I opened it up to the public, and I got about, I want to say, 25 people that contacted me that said, yeah, sure, hey, I'll play test it. And I made a deal with them. I said, look, you're going to get the draft product to kind of play test. And I made a Google Docs form with a bunch of questions and like a survey. And I said, when you're done running it, fill out the survey, and that's like your credit. That means you've completed the play test. And then I'll credit you in the final product. You'll get the final product itself. And you'll get kind of like, you know, I'll take all your feedback and we'll work on it together and tweak it. And
okay.
Yeah. And so I got about, for verse 3, I had 11 dungeon masters
DM it
uniquely. And there was over 40, I think, unique players that actually played it.
I'm actually just looking at that list of playtest players. There's a lot of them there.
Yeah, it's pretty robust, you know?
Yeah, it's good, man.
So then I took those folks, and I do that like in a Facebook group. I kind of managed that process. And then I rolled it into verse 4, and I did the same thing, put out an open call. Most of the DMs that completed the playtest for verse 3 wanted to do verse 4.
Mm-hmm.
So that one is finishing up playtest right now, actually.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's good. It's good to get a group of people that want to play test it and that you can trust. But I'm not too worried about sharing my early draft manuscript. I know some people are, they get kind of worried about that, but I don't see an issue with it.
So what about with your other stuff? Like, you've made a fighter subclass, the Cyborg, which is very cool and also has very, very cool artwork. Did you get that one play tested as well?
Yeah. That one I play tested. Just that one, not like open to the public, just myself and Jeremy Forbing, who is on DM's Guild. He is someone I've collaborated with on Cyborg, was the first project we did together. He is very well known for his like character options, player options on DM's Guild. So he helped me craft that. And the playtesting was also kind of like him looking at it. And I had, I think, two other creative consultants that looked at that and kind of tweaked it. And we went back and forth over several iterations to make the Cyborg class, which is that kind of spawned from the Durden city. That's kind of what that Durga Dorf on the front is supposed to be, one of those guys. And you know, that one was a little, I haven't like had a campaign with that subclass, which would be interesting to try.
But yeah, I'm going to show it to one of my players because I think they might really like that. I think that would fit very well with them.
That'd be awesome.
The other two adventures I just wanted to talk about quickly was The Little Astronaut and The Dreams of Prince Popple.
Yeah, those come from, you know, being inspired as a father. So The Little Astronaut is an adventure I made because I have my 3-year-old son and I wanted to play D&D with him, like just to try it. Be like, hey, you know, what age do you start playing with your kids, right?
Yeah,
like,
sure.
I've seen a bunch of different ages out there. So I made this small little adventure. I got a map from Miska Friedman and I put together this adventure and I played it. I actually play tested it with my son like multiple times. So that did get a lot of play testing.
That's so cool, man.
Yeah, I found that a kid that's 3 years old, and my son's very energetic, so he's not like someone that's just going to sit there and focus. But the way in which it's written, their imagination is so rich that you can just have this. It takes place in a space station in the astral plane, and you know the child that you play with is supposed to be the little astronaut. They play that character, and it's very simplified rules. You know, they roll a d20. There's really no modifiers or stats to their character, and there's no combat, but they're just exploring, and they see, like, you know, some fey creatures, and they find tentacled creature in there, and they find like a DJ booth. So it's fun, and you can play with your kids. So I recommend if you're a parent, you want to see, you know, if you have a young one in your life, or if you're a friend of a family, or if you just, you know, you're a babysitter, like, check it out. I think you'll be surprised at how much fun the kids have. And my son, he still comes up and is like, I want to play The Little Astronaut. So we do.
Oh, see, that's cool, man. So like I have suggested it to a couple of friends and I'm going to print it and give it to them because they're like, well, I don't have a 20-sided dice. I'm like, well, I'll get you one and it's going to be good. Because it's amazing what young kids come up with. Like I run a D&D club at the high school I work at, and we get the new kids in the year when they're about 12-13, and the imagination of a 12 and 13 year old is just amazing. Like there is no knowing exactly what's going to happen when you give them a problem to a group of 12 or 13 year olds. You know, it's awesome.
Oh, absolutely.
Young kids just go for it. And I could only imagine what kids age between sort of 3 and 6 would do with that freedom and their liberated imagination.
Yeah, you know, you keep them, I think if you keep the session to about 15 minutes or less, that's all the little astronauts made for, they'll be able to just sit there and come up with some crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty funny. And the second one you mentioned, The Dreams of Prince Popple. So my son, Alexander, the 3-year-old I mentioned, his nickname's Popple. So the story's kind of like, you know, inspired by him. And it was a 1-page adventure contest that MT Black had put on for anybody. It was like an open call. This is back a couple months ago.
Yeah, I did see that on Twitter, yeah.
Yeah, he just said, hey, I'm going to do this 1-page adventure contest. If you want to submit, you have until like July to do it. So I said, okay, yeah, I'm going to do this thing. You know, it should be fun. I wanted to see if I could design a multiple hour adventure on a single page and also have like a map and have it look nice. So that was like my goal going into it. I didn't really have anything beyond that. And again, this goes back to the design process of I don't write notes. I don't do an outline. I just kind of like start writing and think of it as I go along. I started writing this story. Had to do with Salt. The rule was you had to tie your story to Salt Marsh, the new book that came out. So I said, okay, there's a little boy named Prince Popple, and he calls himself the Prince of Salt Marsh. And as I started writing this adventure, you know, if you haven't read it yet, there is a, you know, trigger warning about the child lock, because ultimately the story ended up being about my wife and I, we had lost a baby when she was pregnant. She had a miscarriage, and it was cathartic for me because we went through this, tragic incident, but at the time, like, my wife and I really didn't talk about it too much. It was like, it happened and I was there to support my wife. And I don't think like I ever grieved. I was just like, you know, I'm here for you. I want to be strong. And, you know, we're going to get through this. And we did. And we had two more children after that. But I never got to sat there and like thought about that loss and never really grieved. And through the process of writing that adventure, I think was able to grieve. We talked about it, and she was happy that I had wrote the adventure. And I think it, hopefully when you read it, it has a beautiful ending. It's a tragic kind of ending, but I think it's a beautiful one. Cause I know there's probably a lot of other parents out there who maybe lost a child or had a miscarriage. And this is something that's kind of there for them.
And it was, reading it, that's what you felt, you know. I think you've described the ending very well. You know, it's tragic, but it's lovely at the same time. A very, very, what's the word I'm looking for? Imaginative and creative way to process and deal with such a tragic experience. It's really a really nice adventure.
Thank you. Yeah, it's and I was happy to see, you know, when I submitted it, I didn't know what would happen with it, but it ended up winning the competition, which was so that's included in the Lonely Scroll Salt March contest on DM Skilled at MT Black.
That's also an awesome piece of an awesome thing to get your hands on, because I think there are 40
I think it's 47. Yeah.
Yeah, single page adventures.
There's some really good ones in there.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Hey, yeah, I was blown away by just the amazing content that came out of that contest. It's awesome. Hey, thanks for sharing that story, Anthony. That's an amazing story to have, that you've created this thing and it's become such a, you know, it's become a good success.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And on that, you just through what we're talking about, you work with a lot of people. If you look at the credits of any of your adventures, there's a lot of people on your credits list. How do you go about that sort of collaborative approach to your adventure making?
So I think I have an advantage in being new to adventure design from my military experience. Obviously, in the military, I have to oversee operations and do kind of like large-scale collaborative project, if you want to call them that, with getting things done. So I work with a lot of people and I kind of manage processes and projects. And being an adventure designer, I realized you have to recognize what you're good at, what you're not good at, and what assets you can bring to the table to enhance your product. And so I've learned very quickly that artists are critical, I think, to kind of bringing your project to life. I can't draw a stick figure for the life of me. So I need them. You know, I can write things, but I can't draw. So I rely on artists. And so I work with James Gifford a lot, DeSurion a lot. I got a few other artists that did the cover. So Jack Kaiser did the cover for Verse 3. And I'm getting Gordon McAlpin. He is my designer that does graphic design. And he is, I'm starting to work with him almost on every project, because he can just, if anybody hasn't seen one of my products yet, I would say like the Curse of Skull Island is one that's out right now that was designed by him. But what they can do is just bring your product at a level of professionalism that makes it really stand out. So I have that kind of, that's like the structural side of things. And then I have a few creative consultants I work with. Jeremy Forbing's one of them. And the editors. I got on Verse 3, I had three editors alone. So that's very key to help sharpen the writing style
Yeah.
And then you have the playtesters. So it's a team effort. These adventures aren't, these products aren't necessarily good because I wrote it. Because if I had just written it, it would suck. I tell you that. It's it's the culmination of all this creative talent that comes to the team. And my big thing is, you know, I pay them very fair. I pay up front usually. So I think that's very important. I know that there's a lot of struggling artists out there who people don't appreciate.
Yeah, for sure.
They just want to, you know, hey, you should be happy that you're drawing something to get exposure, or, you know, how dare you charge this amount of money? But I think that the tabletop community will thrive when everyone thrives. And that's all the creatives. That's your writers, that's your editors, and that's your artists. I think there's a community out there, and everyone needs to be successful and getting their fair share of pay to grow the hobby. Because otherwise, what we do is, if we don't pay people, is no one's going to bring their talent to this field.
Yeah.
And it's going to dry up.
That's what happens to so many industries, because if you're not paying the people if you're not paying people correctly to do their jobs, that why would they hang around? And I think in today's society, we get so much for free that there are things that we really need to pay for to make sure that they stay around and they're in our realm in the future, you know?
Oh, absolutely. You know, that's a big thing with, you know, the modern, and we're not ignorant to that. You know, it's easy for people to pirate stuff online. But as I've grown and gotten more involved with the creative community, you know, you just see how, man, there's some really talented people out there in this community, that I want to see them stick around, you know, because it would just be sad to see D&D in a couple years lose a lot of their creative geniuses, if you will, because they're not getting paid fair. And so they're going to go do other things, work for an accounting firm, which to me, I'd rather them be here, you know, making cool stuff.
Yeah, that's so, right, man. Yeah. And like in the hobby itself just lends itself to so much creative a creative outlet. So much that I do in my work. So as a teacher, I'm doing D&D stuff in my classroom all the time. And it's because on the weekends and in the evenings, I am reading about it and I'm playing it, and it just helps that creativity thrive. And if artists can get money and writers can get money to do that stuff more often, there's just going to be more of it around.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's amazing what a tabletop game like Dungeons and Dragons can bring. Like you said, I mean, classroom management, that's the table. You ask the dungeon master right there, yeah. Right? You know, I mean, it's great to see how awesome it is in so many facets of life.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic. There was actually an article the other day from, there's a school in Texas that won STEM challenge, I think. So like science, technology, engineering, and maths challenge. And The team that won that, the thing they all had in common was they're all part of the D&D club. I'm like, yeah, man, because those dudes are solving problems all the time.
Yeah, you know, it's easy to solve, like, you know, some science issues when you're dealing with, like, tackling how do I kill a CR20 dragon, right? You know, like, crack that, once you know how to kill the dragons, you can solve the world problems.
Yeah, that's right. What do I do when there's five people attacking me, the floor's falling in, my person unconscious, and, you know, the door's about to lock. Yeah. It's excellent for that. So do you have any tips for people wanting to get into writing adventures for the DMs Guild or RPG Drive-Thru or Adventurers League, any of those things?
Absolutely. So I'm going to kind of preface a couple categories here. So Adventurers League is where I got my start writing. And I think that's really fun to write for because you partner up with a convention. And it's funny because Michael Balin is the guy who runs online conventions I've partnered up with, and he's in Adelaide. He runs all the Adventures League out there. So you can get partnered up with a convention to sponsor your adventure, and you can write an adventure, and people will literally be playing it at the convention, and you get to see it, and it's quite an amazing experience. So that's one option to consider.
Yeah.
The second one is just writing an adventure, period, and putting it up on like DM's Guild. And what I like about DM's Guild is the community is so helpful, so open, and so willing to see you succeed. And my biggest tip would be get onto Facebook and join the Dungeon Master Guild's Creators Circle.
It is so good, isn't it? They're just friendly people offering advice. You can throw any question out there. It's not going to get shut down. And you never know what question or what post you put on there is going to spark a 50 comment thread, you know?
Absolutely. You know, it reminds me of like the newbie zone in an MMO, like just to help, and you get the guards that'll come help protect you from the wilderness. Like that's kind of what that is, because you're able to get, you know, and these are people in the field that have been, you know, MT Black, James Intricasso. I mean, these are people will respond that are well-known professionals that have actually written, you know, some
100%. Yeah, man. And like when I first got on there, I didn't know who these people were. And I'm like, oh yeah, this is helpful. And then over the last few years, I've been like, oh, that's who that guy is. Okay. All right. Cool.
Yeah. So you get involved there. And the biggest key, this is something I'm starting to realize now, and I'm sharing it as with people. And it you know, this is just my opinion, but I think that when you write an adventure, you have to break the mindset that we have about that. And what I mean is, don't think of it as writing an adventure, think of it as designing an adventure, because writing is just a component of the adventure. And I think a lot of people maybe don't grasp that. I know I didn't until I've been doing this for so long, that if I think I'm going to write an adventure, I'm only completing part of a total project.
Yeah, that's so a good way to think.
Yeah, there's a lot of parts missing. And so if you want to be successful, build a team, or you could do it yourself. It's just a lot of work. But think of it as writing is just a component. The other things, you know, I have to look at, just how does it look? Oh, am I going to get any? There's a lot of free art on DM's Guild. So if you don't have a budget, you could get free art and use that in your product.
Yeah.
You can find an editor, or you could edit it yourself, but you have to sit there and take time to do that. So there's a lot of different nuances. And if you go in and you understand what you're really getting yourself into, you can be prepared for when you finally publish it. You could be happy with the product that you provide, and you can realize, you know, it's a lot. There's a lot more than just sitting down and writing it. Because if you go in with just the writing aspect, you might find yourself a little bit overwhelmed. But there's a lot of people that are willing to help you join your team. So
yeah, that's right. And I think using some of those free art assets, you would like, I think people would be surprised how much of that stuff is being used in adventures. And it's, you know, people aren't getting every piece of artwork commissioned all the time, you know, like there's a lot of really great adventures on the DM's Guild and on RPG Drive-Thru that using those stock images, and you can get them for free or you can buy packs. I know on RPG Drive-Thru, there's a lot of free use packs you can buy for pretty cheap that have some fantastic artwork. So if you're doing it on a strict budget, you don't need to be getting artwork commissioned all the time.
No, absolutely. And they have Maps by Dyson Logos, who...
Yeah, I didn't even know about that, man. I saw that the other day. That is amazing. Those maps are fantastic.
Yeah, he does. You know, he has hundreds of maps for free through his licensing that you can use for commercial products. And I mean, so the resources are there. It just takes a while for, again, that's why you go to the Facebook group or you go on Twitter and you ask people in the DMs Guild where to find those assets, because if you went strictly on a free budget or a zero cost budget, you could find professional maps by professional cartographers. You could find professional artwork as well that can be used in your product. So, and there's a lot of templates now coming out too for like the page texture, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
Stuff like that that are really affordable and cheap. I think they're like less than a couple bucks. But you can make a pretty good looking adventure for very on a shoestring budget, and it could be successful. You know?
Yeah, that's right. And it happens a lot. There's a lot of stuff that I've bought, and as I've been looking through, I'm like, oh yeah, that's some stock images. And there's the actual DMs Guild stuff that are stock images as well. So that's I think there's some great tips, Anthony. Now it's promo time. What products have you got out at the moment, and what's on the way, and where can people find you?
All right. So, well, let's start with where you can find me. You can find me mainly on Twitter, is where I'm active, and it's just strictly all Dungeons and Dragons all the time for me. And that's at Thrawn589. Thrawn, like the Star Wars character.
Yeah, I did pick up on that. Yeah.
So, what I have out right now, my latest one was the Dreams of Prince Popple, which just got released in The Lonely Scroll. But I have everything's kind of culminating right now. It's very interesting. So September, I have collaborated with the Monsters of the Blood War, which is coming out. It's this big compendium of monsters and creatures and layers that's going to be affiliated with Descent to Avernus.
Oh, cool.
The new hardcover. And actually statted out the Heir of Orcus. I think she's like a CR-15 demon.
Hey.
So you get to see her in her full glory. I statted out Vindictus in there as well, the angel.
Ah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
She statted. And then I have a lair that I created, which is where Vindictus has a legion in Avernus, and that's where she's kind of like leading the defense. So her whole lair is like a little fortress that's mapped out, and you could go run that if you want. So that's coming out September. Part of a collaboration with a lot of other creators. And October, I have two things coming out. I have Weekend at Strahd's, which is a total spoof on Weekend at Bernie's. And it is, I'm working with Oliver Clegg, who does all the Ravenloft products. And it is, I don't, it's either going to be like the worst thing to ever hit DM's Guild, or it's going to be pretty good. We're pushing limits here, so we'll see how it's received. But I think it's a product that's made for one night, 2 hours, 2 to 4 hours, and just like you're gonna get around the table, have some drinks, and have a good time. Like
that's gonna be a bonus episode for Committee Quest podcast, because that is exactly the sort of thing that my players are into. So I think when that hits, I'll let you know when we record. Okay, man.
Awesome. Yeah, I appreciate cool. it. And let's see, Verse 3 comes out, the Heir of Orcus Verse 3. That'll come out in print on demand and PDF. And I think October 8th is what I'm shooting for. So that's coming up right around the corner. And then in November, Verse 4 premieres. And that's going to be print on demand as well. I don't know if I'll release it in November or maybe a month after that. I'm still working on the timeline, but it'll be ready. And I have a project that I can't really name. This is a new project, but I'm taking on a role of a producer on, which is interesting.
Okay.
What I've done is I've fronted the finances for a big project that I saw that I thought was going to be extremely successful in the guild. And I'm helping to like manage part of the design. I've brought on my buddy, Gordon McAlpin. And I'm collaborating with Jeremy Forbing. It's his product that he made, and it's going to be a big surprise on the guild, I think.
Yeah.
But we'll be announcing it shortly, so just keep an eye on that.
Very mysterious, Anthony.
That'll be ready we're shooting for sometime around Halloween, so you know, late October, maybe early November, but it's going to be fun.
All right, that sounds like a whole heap of cool stuff on the way, and stuff that's already available. Cool. Very cool. All right. Thank you very much, Anthony. I've had a great chat today. I hope you've all got as much as I have got out of this discussion. And thank you again for sharing your thoughts on adventure design and how you go about creating what you create. It's been really great.
Well, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate the time you took to put this together. Thank you.
Not a problem, mate. Not a problem. And remember, you can find Anthony on Twitter, and you can also find his adventures on the DMs Guild. Make sure you check him out. You can play Heir of Orcus Verse 1 and 2 and 3, which is out very soon, and you can play that at your Adventurers League table. Thank you for listening, everybody. Take care. You have been listening to a Committee Quest production. Our music is supplied by Retro Reverb Records. You can see the details in the show notes. Our ambient sounds are supplied by Sword Coast Soundscapes. If you want to know more about us, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Committee Quest. We would like to thank our Patreon supporters for supporting us. You can head over to Patreon and support us there. Another way you can show your support is by leaving us a review on whatever app it is you use to listen to podcasts. Thank you very much, and take care.